Hey there, it's Lars. Thanks for checking out the Lars Larson podcasting experience, and have a fantastic day.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to Wednesday on the Radio Northwest Network. Glad to be with you today, live today. I know I was off yesterday. I had to travel, and unfortunately, my private jet was in the garage for an oil change or something. No, I flew on Southwest, and I wore my Donald Trump hat to make sure that, you know, you get festival seating on Southwest Airlines, so you can sit next to anybody you want to sit next to. I figure wearing a Trump hat was the best way to make sure that whoever decided to sit down next to me and to Tina was somebody who wasn't necessarily all that liberal. Anyway, glad to have you with me on a Wednesday. We're saving lives today with World Concern. 44 cents and some clean water to save millions of lives. It's an easy thing to do, and we'll tell you about that. We're also talking about the issues here in the Pacific Northwest. Among them, a woman shot to death by police in Seattle, and some local black activists with Black Lives Matter say it's the result of racism, and it's a result of, it's the result of a woman being shot for no good reason. I guess they ignore the fact that she had two knives in her hands when she confronted the police, and that's almost never going to work out well. We'll talk about that. The Oregon Government Ethics Commission is going to restart its investigation of John Kitzhaber and his girlfriend for alleged influence peddling while he was in office. Thankfully, he is gone now. We'll talk with Willamette Week Star reporter Aaron Mesh about how the Saudi government posted an absolutely astronomical amount of bail for a man accused of killing a teenage girl here in the Northwest. And of course, once the bail was posted, what do you think that Saudi national did? That's right, he beat feet for the border just as fast as he possibly could. And the rich folks in one Northwest neighborhood do not want any of those lesser folks moving into their neighborhood. Now they're trying to use historic designation of their neighborhood as a way to lock people up. As I said, David Harms will be joining us from World Concern. We'll talk about the 44-cent cure. And health insurance premiums, speaking of health, are skyrocketing here in the Northwest thanks to Obamacare. If you run into any of your Democrat members of Congress, you might want to ask them, do you really want to keep Obamacare when the estimate is that in the state of Washington, average insurance premiums in the private marketplace are going to be going up 22% next year, in 1 year alone, after several years of increases? Does it make sense to keep a system that is driving people out of health care? And are U.S. mayors all talk and no action when it comes to the environment? Todd Myers is going to join us. You know, you see all these cities like Seattle and Portland and Eugene and the rest, and they're out there saying, well, even if President Trump is going to get away from the Paris Climate Accords, we're going to do it on our own. The thing is, in politics, it's easy to make promises. It's much harder to actually follow through on them. And unfortunately, those Northwest cities that have said that they're going to do their own Paris Climate Accord, well, they're not allowed to do that because cities and states and counties can't engage in foreign policy. But when they've made promises in the past that they're going to go with things like the Kyoto Protocol, they don't actually live up to their word. But they still get the same positive effect if they go out and make the promise anyway when it comes to people's votes. Are citizens from areas that dump transit freeloading if they go ahead and use public trains and buses? We'll talk about Pierce County, which is threatening to leave the Sound Transit Taxing District. And Ron Wyden, the senator from Oregon who lives in New York State, is getting all wound up over the ethics of promoting the Lego Batman movie. We'll get you to that story as well. And media all-star District Attorney Josh Marquis joins me today. We'll talk about the fact that Oregon Democrats have gone on record. They don't want to pay the salaries of district attorneys. The vote to agree to pay the salaries of DAs was just barely approved, and it seems to be a message that's saying, we don't want the laws enforced. We don't want ballot measure 11 enforced. We don't want bad guys to go to prison. And we'll talk about why they're sending that message to the people who are the chief prosecutors, at least in the state of Oregon. We'll talk about swarm AI and how that may be used to improve the human condition. We'll talk to Louis Rosenberg, who is the CEO of Unanimous AI. Artificial intelligence is what we're talking about. And the latest sanctuary bill would promise to make Oregon even more of a sanctuary state than it has been, even though for 30 long years they've had a law in place that says we're going to protect illegal aliens. Now they want to go even further, and we'll talk about that too. And your phone calls and emails, they're always welcome right here. Our quick poll today, should the state cops crack down on fast lane campers? You know, the folks who get in the left lane on the highway or the freeway, and they go along at 50 or 55 miles an hour. In Washington State, the Washington State Patrol is cracking down shouldn't they be cracking down in every state in the Northwest? Today's quick poll can be found at LarsLarson.com and is brought to you by Dan Jones Conveyor Trucks. Rock, gravel, sand, or topsoil. Not the Dan Jones trucks. Put it where you want it and save your aching back. You want to join the best conversation in talk journalism? It's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense. Presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold, hard facts from Lars.
Well, we hear a lot about the green energy thing these days, and you might think that that's related to good for the environment. You know, green, good for the environment. But I've noticed that green energy usually means green in somebody's pocket, and in some cases, even graft and corruption. Take, for example, the guilty plea yesterday of Joe Colello, who took almost $300,000 of the taxpayers' money and put it in his own pocket in illegal kickbacks. That included a Seattle energy consultant, Martin Shane, who's been indicted for forgery that made the tax credit scam possible. None of this, of course, would have happened if the government had stayed out of energy schemes like Solyndra and Solar World and tax credits and so-called incentives to produce energy using methods that do not pencil out in the real world. If the energy deal is all private, you don't have to worry about somebody paying too much for oil or gas or coal, because in the real world, you make decisions based on dollars and cents, not based on whether the thing you're selling is politically in vogue or not. But when Uncle Sugar promises tax credits for magic beans and unicorn horns, you should fully expect that somebody will figure out how to scam the system.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
Well, today's Daily Grill I'm going to give collectively to all the folks in the big building down in Salem with a gold bowling trophy on top. That is the Oregon legislature, which has taken a step closer to defying a federal government crackdown on illegal aliens. The House has passed a bill that seeks to restrict the ability of state and local agencies from even asking about a person's immigration status and prohibiting public agencies from disclosing information to federal officials, except under some circumstances. Republicans have been opposed to it, and Democrats are in favor of it, as usual. Alan writes in with today's best email, but you can always send more to talk at LarsLarson.com. He says, it seems there are so many traffic accidents lately, we're now having problems finding enough tow trucks to fill the needs. This morning, the Salem Police Department needed almost an hour to get a truck to yet another frightful traffic jam during the peak of morning rush. The increase in single vehicle accidents where the driver simply drives off the road or into a tree or a power pole or a building. It's amazing. Now, what do you suspect is the cause of all this? He writes, is it smartphone zombies checking their email or pot smoking smartphone zombies checking their email? Signed, Alan. Send those emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. But I'll tell you what we'll do before we do that. We've got a little change in plans here because David Harms is sitting in studio with me right now from World Concern. I know, my mistake. Sorry about that, Jordan. But David Harms is with me. David, I teased at the top that we can save millions of lives with 44 cents a pill and a little bit of clean drinking water. Tell me what World Concern is doing to save lives and how the folks who are listening can help you out.
Well, the reality is that there are every year about 4 million children that will lose their lives from something that we can cure with the medicine that's 44 cents. The problem is parasites. And so as they get into children's systems through bad drinking water, bad sanitation, they wreak havoc and they will compromise the child's system, blindness, malnutrition, disease, death, 4 million children. And we can save them with pocket change, literally 44 cents. So what we've been doing today is asking you to make a phone call or to go online, make a gift. And for every $44, 100 kids get medicine that will cure them. And so for 132, that's 300 kids, $440 would cure 1,000 children.
And all we're talking about is a pill.
Yep.
One pill that does something that
I mean, heck, Americans do this for their pets all the time. They say, my dog has worms, I'm taking him to the vet, I'm going to get him taken care of because it's terrible. And with kids, these children are going to die without it. That and some clean drinking water, which is the other thing that's provided by this, will actually cure the disease and take care of the problem and let them grow up healthy and happy.
Well, what we want to do is not only cure them, but keep them cured with the clean water and the sanitation. And that's what you're doing with your gift. So far today, 56,495 kids are getting this medicine, which is an amazing outpouring of generosity. My brain went to 60,000, Lars. I was thinking, what would it take to get to 60,000 kids cured by, in the next 15 minutes? And it's 12 people. 12 people that could call the number I'm about to give $132, or maybe you can give more. You can opt in whatever level it works, but the number to call, 888-544-5448. 888-544-5448. Be one of 12 people giving that $132. Opt in whatever level works for you, but also then go to your website.
Save some money. Go to the website, LarsLarsen.com, and help out, save a life, and save some important lives on the other side of the globe. You're listening to the Lars Larsen Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larsen Show. Glad to be with you live all over the Pacific Northwest, the states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network, and glad to get your calls, too. You know, I mentioned this the other night when I was doing the show from Baton Rouge because I was out of town for a little remote, and this one troubles me because the police in every American city confront people on a regular basis. But the number of those confrontations that even lead to any kind of use of force is relatively small. I know the numbers best. I don't know them for Seattle, but I know them for Portland. About 400,000 citizen contacts every year, almost over 1,000 contacts a day. And of those 4,000, I think the number is around 4,000, about 0.1% lead to some kind of use of force by the police. And out of that number, an even smaller number leads to some kind of use of a firearm. And yet a police shooting in Seattle in which a woman had called the police. She reported a burglary. Something was wrong at her home. But when the officers arrived, she confronted them with a knife in each hand. And her name, Charlena Lyles, it is sad that because of that confrontation, the police were put in a situation where they felt they had no other choice other than to shoot her, and she died. Well, now you have members of the community, including groups like Black Lives Matter, who are now they're out trying to engender the support of teachers and students and all these people saying this woman was shot because she's a person of color. I would beg to differ. She was shot because she presented a threat to the police. And it doesn't matter what color you are. If you present a threat either to the police or to other people and the police are present and they see that you're a threat to people around you, they will do what they can. But at some point they have to take action. And in this case, the action was that they shot her. Well, now you're literally seeing people say that the police murdered her, which I think is a slur on the Seattle police that is so serious it cannot go unchallenged. Murder is when you unlawfully and illegally take the life of a human being. When the police are confronting a dangerous individual armed with not one but two weapons and they have no other choice, they may have to shoot you. That is not murder. That is the lawful taking of life by the police who are empowered to do exactly that. Well, again, they are being described as murderers by family members of Charlena Lyles. They had a vigil last night in Seattle. And at the end of the ceremony, this is the way the Times, the Seattle Fish Wrapper, was reporting. Anger swept through the crowd of mourners and stirred hundreds to march into the streets. They brought traffic to a standstill until the group finally dispersed. Well, these marches and protests and jamming up other people's way home is not the way to solve a problem. The way to solve the problem is not to confront the police with weapons in your hands. That's the solution. And to call the police murderers, that's just absolutely out of line. To your calls now at 866-A-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Let's go to Sarah, first of all. Hey, Sarah, welcome to the Lars Larsen Show.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet. What's on your mind?
So I had an idea over the weekend of how I think that we could stop terrorism. I don't know if it would work in this country, but I think in European countries it would really work. You've got so many refugees that are coming in from various different countries in the Middle East, and it's usually these people that are the ones that are doing the terrorist acts. And I think, personally, if I were the prime minister, like, of England, I would tell them the next terrorist attack that happens, whatever nationality that person is or the people who are involved in it, every single refugee from that country will be exported out of the country.
Hmm.
Because they are in tight-knit communities, and I think it would force other people to turn on them, their own people, because they know they have a good thing in the country they're in. They don't want to lose it. They might hate us, but they don't want to lose the benefits.
You know, I would point out to you, Sarah, before somebody else calls and points it out, that some of the most recent acts in Europe in particular have been taken by people who grew up there. They were not refugees, but they were in some ways radicalized or turned into jihadis, you know, through the internet, through friends, through mosques or whatever. And the fact that somebody came from, say, Ethiopia or came from Sudan, that if you said we're going to kick all those people out, first of all, I don't think you could legally do that, not in Great Britain and certainly not in the United States of America. But I do think it's sensible to start restricting the number of people who come in. And I'll remind people that the former FBI director, James Comey, said of about 2,000 terrorist attacks during his 3.5 years as FBI director, about 300 of them, 1 in 6, had been committed by refugees who had come into the country. So that would be a sensible way to do it. What you're proposing, I think, is something that's not possible under law and not likely to get passed as a law either in Europe or in the United States. Let's go to Lauren. Hey, Lauren. Oh, hold on a second. I want to go to a naysayer first, because we do try to put naysayers first. Marie is on the line from Bellingham, listening on KGMI. Hey, Marie, welcome to the program. What do you and I disagree about?
Hi, Lars. I saw the headlines in the paper, and I don't care what city it's in. I really don't even care what color the people are. All I know is the feeling I get. Those cops shot that woman so many times. She obviously, so might I be, a little bit off in the head, a little bit passionate, a little bit screwed up, a lot screwed up. But she had 4 kids. What they did, and I don't care what city they're in, it was not the best thing. I know they're overworked. I know all that. I get the big picture. They blew it.
Well, I would say it's never the best thing when the police are put in a position where they have to shoot someone. But when you say she's a little off in the head, I would say that also describes Jeremy Christian, the man who stabbed 3 men in the neck with a knife just a few weeks ago, and he killed 2 of them and nearly killed the 3rd one. So when the police show up at a scene and a woman confronts them holding 2 knives in her hands, how long do you want them to wait before they take action, before she hurts somebody?
Honestly, longer than they waited. There's a woman. They have guns. There's more than one of them. Sorry, Lars.
Okay, but
they've got to deal with their job better.
Marie, tell me this. You're a police officer, and you're trained that if somebody with a knife gets within 21 feet of you, that they can stick that knife in your chest before some other vital part, your neck, before you can shoot enough bullets to stop them. So when you say wait longer, how many cops do you want to see dead to try
to...
What's that?
Arguing, but I'm saying they shot her 4 times.
The threat is gone.
Come on. The threat was a woman. Come on, are they men or what?
Well, hold on, Marie, a woman with a knife.
Wait, Mark, really, I get it. This pisses me off.
Well, why does it make you mad that the police are there to protect people who pose a threat?
They're not sometimes. They're just there. They're trigger happy. Look, I've had experiences, Lars, and
trigger
I'm not
happy?
There.
If they were trigger happy. There are, I looked these numbers up the other night, there are 1 million sworn officers in the United States. If they're trigger happy, why is it that 1 million sworn officers who are out on the streets 24/7, 365 around America, and the total number of people shot every year by the police is 920? Wouldn't you expect that we would have literally millions of people?
You know. No. I'm just saying, I do think the cops have a lot of pressure on them.
I think they have pressure on them, but the pressure is to save lives. Don't confront the cops with a weapon and you won't end up dead. Maria, I appreciate a good naysayer. Thank you. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. We're live on the Radio Northwest Network, and I'll get back to your calls shortly. Star reporter Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week joins me now with an amazing story about how the Saudi national government bailed out an accused killer who has now fled the country. Aaron, good to have you on.
Great to be here, Lars.
So would you mind reminding folks about what it is that Abdulrahman Noura is accused of doing?
He is accused from last August of speeding down Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard and hitting and killing Fallon Smart, a 15-year-old girl crossing the street, and then fleeing the scene. So it's a hit and run.
So there he is, hit and run, which is a felony, manslaughter, which is obviously a felony. He's charged with first-degree manslaughter, and they put him up originally on a smaller bail because he says, I'm so poor, I need a public lawyer appointed for me. He's been a community college student for the last 3 or 4 years, and he pleads poverty. But then all of a sudden, when folks realize that he's a flight risk because he's a foreign national, he's here on a student visa, it seems, and he might just flee the country rather than spend, well, if convicted, a mandatory 10 years in prison for the manslaughter. So they up the bail to $1 million, and who puts up the cash?
The Saudi consulate. So this is important, is that you've walked us through this. This is a story by Nigel Jaquis that is a real bombshell, that he has found the confidential document created by the Multnomah County Sheriff's Department that explains why he's a flight risk. And there are several reasons, including the fact that the family he was staying with included all 3 passengers in the vehicle, which means that he would be in constant contact with witnesses, which is against the law. At any rate, So the Sheriff's Department says you should not release this person before trial. But this is crucial. Oregon law says that for anything other than treason and first-degree murder, you can't hold someone without bail. Some level of bail has to be created. Recognizing the flight risk, the Multnomah County Circuit Judge, whose name is Judge Cheryl Albrecht, raises the bail to $1 million, which is an extraordinarily high bail. It's rarely, if ever, seen. And yet, out of the blue, the Los Angeles consulate of the Saudi government steps in and pays a $100,000 bond, which is 10% of the bail, as Oregon law requires.
Now, people might think, well, this is because he's some important Saudi, like he's the son of a prince or a sultan or something. And that's not the case, is it?
It's not. In fact, as far as we can tell, his family is not influential. His father runs a trailer business and his mother is a school teacher.
And that's it. And yet the Saudi government has made a practice of going out and paying the bail of foreign of their citizens when they're arrested here in the United States for sometimes very serious crimes.
That's correct. It seems to me that the Saudi government, that is one of the richest countries in the world, has figured out a loophole in the U.S. justice system, which is monetarily based, right? So the way that you get out of jail, you get out of jail free card in this country is if you can pay the money, which, you know, tends to help rich people and not help poor people, but that's another subject for another day. At any rate, the realization the Saudi government came to is that really, if your government is rich enough, no bail is too high. So in 2015, the Saudi government posted a $100,000 bail for a Saudi national accused of rape in Utah. In 2013, the Saudis posted a $2 million bail. And in fact, that was all $2 million for a student who was accused of murdering a bar owner. The charges were later dropped. He appears to have been innocent. And in 2013, a Saudi princess was accused of human trafficking. And once again, the Saudi government covered her $5 million bail. And I believe they covered all $5 million. So the policy problem that this obviously creates is, how do you set bail when a foreign consulate is willing to pay any amount of money?
I guess you set it at a number that's high enough that even they are uncomfortable with it. But it effectively means that Saudi nationals in this country, for their benefit, so they can go to school or so they can work or whatever, are effectively prosecution proof. And that doesn't sound like it matches with America's belief that everybody's equally subject to the law.
Well, they're certainly bail proof. So it's not necessarily the case that that they're prosecution proof. In many of, in at least one of these cases we've discussed, the person was in fact convicted and is now in jail.
In absentia, or they were brought back, or is there possible this case?
Well, so remember, this case is different than the ones we previously discussed, and it's different for a really important reason, which is why it's been in the news. Is that Abdulrahim Nora has fled?
Yeah.
So he's on the lam. He has gone missing. And the other cases we've discussed, the three others, the people involved did not flee their bail. They in fact appeared in court, and either they were convicted or the charges were dropped. But in this case, he has disappeared.
Now, so, do we know if he's even still in the country? Did the judge, for example, pull his passport along with placing a high bail?
The judge did pull his passport. So it's highly likely he's still in the country. It would be extremely difficult unless he's agreed to be smuggled for him.
Well, hold on, Aaron, because we have these rock solid borders around America where people can't get in and out of the country at will.
It's possible he's in Tijuana, Lars. I don't know.
Could he, if he got to Tijuana, if he got to the Saudi consulate in Mexico City, do you suppose he could arrange for transportation home if the Saudi government was willing to put up 100 G's in cold hard cash to be able to bail him out?
Lars, you know how much I love to speculate on the air, but I honestly don't know the answer on that one.
I'm just saying out loud what, you know, if you're a Saudi national, and I understand, if he's looking down the barrel of 10 years in prison, and the alternative is, well, I'll just split town, and I'll see if I can get back home, and then I just won't go back to the United States, because I assume with this accusation, well, is there a statute of limitations on first-degree manslaughter?
I don't believe there is. No. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure there's no statute of limitations on any crime that involves killing someone.
So what does the Saudi national government say? And it'd be interesting to see whether the Trump administration would say something to them, say, we can't have you doing this kind of thing.
That's an easy answer. They won't answer the phone.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately. So on top of that, there's another story. And is there anything more to say about Abdulrahman Nura?
Obviously, if you see him, say something. But yeah. Other than that, no, I don't think so.
No, and so he's on the lam somewhere, and let's assume that we can hope that the FBI and Homeland Security will try to track him down. What is this story about the rich folks in one northwest neighborhood who don't want the poor folks moving in?
It's northeast neighborhood, and it's the neighborhood of Laurelhurst. And this is our cover story this week, is about density. It's a classic story that you and I have talked about many times before, is the old question of God give me density, but not yet.
My neighborhood.
Yeah, not in my neighborhood, per se, not here. So the neighborhood in Laurelhurst just finished the first steps of applying for National Historic District status with the National Park Service. So the goal of this, to keep it short, is that they don't want land developers to show up in their neighborhood with backhoes and do demolition jobs on what they consider to be historic homes and replace them with larger homes, with duplexes, or with apartment complexes. So the goal is to use National Park Service designation to keep development from happening.
How do you get part of a city designated as under National Park Service protection? This isn't Mount Rainier or Crater Lake.
It's surprisingly easy, as it turns out. It turns out that if you go to both the state and the feds, and you can show, and this is all very subjective, that your neighborhood has architectural significance, or the first styles of homes that have ever been created or built, and those homes are, say, more than 75 years old, that it's pretty much a rubber stamp process. It's a lot of work.
Isn't that most of America?
It sort of seems to me like it just might be.
I mean, I think most of the houses I lived in Tillamook as a kid were more than that old. Some of them didn't even have real stone foundations. They were sitting on wood blocks.
I've lived in some crappy houses that I'm pretty sure are the first of their kind architecturally.
So, but in this case, is anybody casting this thing other than you folks as this is the rich folks in a rich neighborhood saying we don't want the poor folks moving in because the houses have become so darned expensive that the only way a developer can make money on it is to, say, buy an older house, tear it down, and build six or eight apartment units or a couple of smaller houses there, and then you can sell them at a price that'll actually make sense. But it's the rich neighborhoods that are able to do this.
Yes, and to her credit, Tina Kotek, the House Speaker, has made it very clear she considers this to be NIMBYism on steroids.
Doesn't Tina live in Laurelhurst? Or no, where does she
live? No, she lives in North Portland, Kenton, I believe.
But I'm sure some of her donors live in Laurelhurst. Hillhurst.
I don't doubt it, which is what makes, I'm going to give her some credit on this. That makes her act a little bit more courageous.
Well, that's a good thing to do. Aaron, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on and appreciate the great stories.
Thank you so much, Lars. My pleasure.
You bet. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. You can find that at WWeek.com. And sitting in studio with me right now is David Harms from World Concern. We're telling you about the 44-cent cure. You know, it's difficult to think about, and I know it's lunchtime, but there are millions of kids around the world that have parasites inside them. You know, what we'd call in one of our pets, worms, basically, David. And for 44 cents, a pill and some clean drinking water can save 3 or 4 million young children from dying or going blind.
Well, and that's exactly what we're trying to do. We are trying to cure kids. And that's why it's called the 44-cent cure, because it cures them and it only costs 44 cents to provide this medicine. So we're very thankful for those that have stepped up. Kevin from Portland, Clifford from McMinnville, Brian from Vancouver, three people that have just recently stepped up. Thank you very much for providing some money that will cure children. You're right. There are 4 million children a year that will lose their lives from the effects of these parasites. They just can't fight off any kind of disease, and they're living in poverty. So, of course, they're going to be. Exactly.
And there's a lot of pain. By the way, think about this. You know, we're such a fortunate country. I make the point that the poorest person in this country can walk up to a tap, in almost any tap on any building anywhere in the country, open that tap and drink the water and know that it's great, clean drink. We're so wealthy, we flush our toilets with drinking water. And these kids are drinking water that is used by other people in the area as a toilet, as a place to take a bath, as a place for animals to feed and unfortunately relieve themselves. And this is what they're drinking, and it makes them sick.
Yeah, and they just don't have access to this. And so what we're asking you to do is two things. One, by making a gift, you're going to provide the medicine that will cure them as they are sick. And at the same time, we're going to go in with clean water wells and sanitation systems so that they don't get sick again, right?
44 cents saves one child. $44 saves 100. $132 saves 300. We'd like you to call and make the call to 888-544-5448. That's 888-544-5448. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and emails live on the Radio Northwest Network. Our quick poll today, should the state cops crack down on fast lane campers? I know my colleague John Carlson was asking about this the other morning, but I'm curious. I think it's a great idea. When I get in the fast lane, I'm going faster than the other traffic. When I decide I don't want to go as fast as the person behind me, I move over to the right. That seems sensible. Well, Frank writes in, Lars, this week the WSP was making a big deal about cracking down on interstate drivers who settle in the left lane and stay there. What a joke. If I heard correctly on the radio, the Emphasis Patrol started Tuesday and goes through Thursday. For several months, I drive I-5 from the Edmonds area to Bellingham every Sunday late in the afternoon. I get in the far right lane from Smoky Point to Mount Vernon and pass 60% of the northbound vehicles on the interstate. Most of the vehicles I had to move left to pass were semi-trucks and motorhome camping trailers. I'd watch cars entering the roadway from the entrance ramp right in front of me and immediately move to the far left. I'd just pass them on the right. My point is that a three-day emphasis is a joke. The WSP should get serious about these drivers every day. I learned a rule of the road years ago that said, keep right except to pass. Well, it seems like a sensible rule to me. Let's go to Andrew. Hey, Andrew, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, Lars. I just wanted to make a comment about your last guest there from Willamette Week. Hey. I actually live in Laurelhurst. I didn't agree with the historic designation for a variety of other reasons because it puts a lot of limitations on the homeowners and what they can do with their houses. It makes it very difficult to do any sort of changes almost all the way down to the paint color.
Yep.
But what you're not hearing from this article, it's true the developers are coming into the neighborhood. They're wanting to tear down sometimes beautiful old homes, sometimes, you know, the crappy old homes. But what they're building are not apartment complexes, are not duplexes, are not homes that are going to be affordable housing. They're building what are coined as McMansions.
And what's wrong with that?
These homes are well over $1 million. I mean, it's actually good for my property value. but it, to the argument that we're keeping the poor people out by doing the historic designation, we're trying to preserve the value of the neighborhood rather.
Well, hold on. You just admitted that if a guy knocks down a $600,000 old house and builds a brand new McMansion that's worth $1 million, you are getting the value of the neighborhood. You're getting a higher value in the neighborhood. And I just framed it in the way that I knew Willamette Week was going to go. But as far as I'm concerned, if you think a house is beautiful, good. Go buy it and hang on to it. And if you don't think it's beautiful enough to merit buying it, then let somebody else buy it and do what they want with it. I think what the neighborhood was proposing is to take away, to steal people's property rights from them, to say you can't do with your property what you want to do. And there's far too much of that going around right now.
No, you're exactly right about that. But to say that you're limiting the amount, you're not allowing these multifamily dwellings and affordable housing that's true. They're not building things that are affordable. They're building things that are more expensive. So that's my point there.
And I get that point. Thank you very much for the call. You've got the Lars Larson Show.